Methane is considered a greenhouse gas and is 25 times more potent than carbon dioxide at warming the planet. Leading climate scientists are worried that the emerging methane craters are a sign of runaway global warming and warn that if a large amount of the methane trapped in the world's permafrost were to be released due to global warming, it would make warming rates exponentially worse.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.immc.org, for Monday, March 2nd, 2015. Nonviolent actions organized against West Bank settlement and political detainees held by Israel announced protest moves. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Dozens of nonviolent resistance activists gathered on Monday morning in Khalit al-Nahla area near Bethlehem City in southern West Bank. Mohammed Mahaysen, coordinator of the Popular Resistance Committee, said that the protesters marched in the area carrying Palestinian flags and posters containing names of villages Israel destroyed in 1948 and expressed their rejection to Israel's ongoing violations of international law. Mahaysen said that Israel is now trying to build Givat Etam colony on more than 420 acres of Palestinian lands in the area, adding that Tel Aviv initially approved the plan in 2004. The official warned that this plan would block geographical contiguity in the area and would also lead to further isolation of Palestinian orchards. Earlier on Monday at dawn, Israeli soldiers kidnapped three Palestinians in Nablus, Ramallah, and Bethlehem and stormed many homes, especially in the southernmost bank districts of Hebron. Soldiers flood also agricultural lands with wastewater near Bethlehem. During the month of February, Israeli occupation forces have kidnapped some 285 Palestinians, 30 of whom are children under the age of 18, according to a report by Hussam, Association of the Palestinian Prisoners and Ex-Prisoners. According to the report, Hebron ranked first regarding the number of youth kidnapped, with the number of 72, followed by Jerusalem 56 and Ramallah 32. In other news, head of the Palestinian Detainees Committee, Isa Karaka, said Monday that the Palestinian political detainees held in different Israeli army detention camps are heading towards escalated protest measures that include total disobedience and hunger strikes. In a press release, Karaka said that the detainees send a letter stating that they intend to start their protest on March 10th by refraining to stand in line for counting, removing electronic equipment from their rooms, refraining from leaving their rooms, and gradually start returning their meals, in addition to chanting and banging the doors and bars of the detention camps. The detainees are protesting the ill treatment by their captives. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, March 2nd, 2015 news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Hassan Bannoura.
Ukrainian and Russian leaders came to an agreement today to provide natural gas to the Ukraine and the European Union through the end of March. Russia has been threatening to halt supplies of natural gas to Europe if it was not paid for previous gas supplies shipped to Europe through the Ukraine. A ceasefire agreement for the Ukraine civil war continues to hold despite provocations from both Western countries and Russia near the Estonia border. Celebrating Estonia's Independence Day, NATO and U.S. troops marched with Estonian troops in a military parade less than 300 yards from the Russian border. Russia responded by conducting its own military parade with heavy weaponry along the same border area. Reeling from the year-long civil war, the Ukrainian government issued new capital and currency controls last week. The controls are designed to combat hyperinflation and a sinking economy, which has dropped over 25% in the last year. In the past few weeks, Ukraine's banking system has teetered on the brink of insolvency from low cash reserves and huge capital outflows as people race to trade in their rapidly inflating Ukrainian currency for euros or American dollars. It is believed a bailout from the EU or America will be needed in the next few weeks to stop a complete collapse of the Ukrainian banking system. Meanwhile, China has stepped into the Russian-Western proxy conflict in the Ukraine on the side of Russia. China stated that America needs to abandon its zero-sum mentality and take into consideration Russia's legitimate security concerns over the Ukraine. On Friday in Russia, a former deputy prime minister under Boris Yeltsin and a top Putin critic was gunned down in Moscow near the Kremlin in Red Square. The opposition leader, Boris Nemtsov, had hours earlier called for a large demonstration on Sunday to protest what he called Putin's illegal annexation of the Crimea. Tens of thousands of people attended the march that became a memorial for the slain politician. Leading Putin officials denied any involvement and called the assassination a provocation meant to discredit the Putin government. Concerned over escalating tensions, the American Secretary of State, John Kerry, met with his Russian counterpart in strained talks today in Brussels about the murder, Ukrainian peace talks, Syria, and the Iranian nuclear program. The meeting came less than 1 week after John Kerry caused an uproar in Russia by stating that Russian leaders had directly lied to his face.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Don Zare, Ken Jones, and Rosalind Scott. Special thanks to Mark Palmer, Cliff Furla, and Andrew Geller. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Janka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Rosalind Scott. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With award-winning journalist Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, Joe Uris leads a discussion on war once again, following up on interviews with noted scholar Noam Chomsky on Democracy Now! At 9, on Alternative Radio, independent journalist Loretta Napoleoni speaks on the ISIS crisis. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Stage and Studio, host DeMay Roberts speaks with Tara Johnson Mettinger, director of the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Fest, about empowering women in filmmaking and media. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Ann Berner of Oregon College of Art and Craft about National Portfolio Day. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support of community radio. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Stay tuned now for an interview with Code Pink, protesting the speech by the Israeli Prime Minister in Washington, D.C. Good night, Rosalyn.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Danielle.
KABU News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
I'm speaking with Allie McCracken. She's with Code Pink in Washington, D.C. Can you tell us about the protests that took place this past weekend? I understand some people were arrested.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. You know, for the last several years, we've been protesting APEC, Annual Policy Conference of Washington, D.C. This year was my fifth, and this weekend, APEC was meeting in the Washington Convention Center to gear up for their big day on Capitol Hill, where they will lobby for tightened sanctions on Iran. And so we took our message of peace and diplomacy with Iran right to their front doorstep at the Convention Center. We had hundreds of people with us. We had creative and fun visuals, and we had several people who engaged in civil disobedience by blocking the front doors of the conference to physically prevent APEC people from going in, but also to make a bold statement that they no longer want to be responsible for the blood on their hands that is caused by Israeli policies which occupy and oppress Palestinians and their land. And, you know, as activists and as peace activists, we don't want to see our country dragged into a war with Iran because we don't believe that war is the solution to anything and because, frankly, our country just can't afford it.
So people engaged in civil disobedience, are they facing any potential sentences for that?
They were charged with an infraction. They didn't get out of the police station until very late last night, so I don't have exact details. But they are out of the police station and in high spirits from what I've heard. And they'll be at our next protest tonight.
And what's the plan for this evening?
So this evening is APEC's gala event where, you know, sadly and embarrassingly, many members of the American Congress will go and listen to APEC speakers, deliver their own speeches. And so we're going to be outside tonight to confront our elected officials who are going in and tell them that, you know, APEC is a dinosaur of a lobby, and it's time for a new foreign policy that's based on peace and diplomacy, not APEC's foreign policy based on occupation and war.
I understand that Benjamin Netanyahu is at this conference, the Israeli Prime Minister, and gave a talk in advance of his talk tomorrow at the U.S. Congress. What's been the response to his talk there?
Well, this morning Netanyahu spoke at APEC, at their conference, and he kind of brushed aside the differences between the U.S. and Israel, you know, kind of like it was no big deal that they don't, you know, the Obama administration doesn't necessarily agree with the Israeli government on its approach to Iran. But I think that, you know, Netanyahu's trying to minimize what is actually a huge rift that's occurring in American politics. Israel used to enjoy bipartisan support in the United States, but now we see that APEC and then the Israeli government is becoming more associated with very right-wing Republican policies here in the United States. So, and that's exemplified by the fact that almost 50 Congress people, all Democrats, are going to be skipping Netanyahu's speech in front of Congress tomorrow. And so, you know, Netanyahu can try to minimize it as much as he wants, but the facts remain.
Another speaker at this conference is Samantha Power, the U.S. representative to the United Nations. What's the significance of her speaking at the APEC conference?
You know, the Obama administration was obviously irritated with John Boehner breaching diplomatic protocol by inviting Netanyahu to speak in front of Congress. And so we took it as a statement that Obama didn't send anyone from his cabinet to go speak at the APEC conference, but it's still embarrassing and shameful that Samantha Power, who is our representative to the international community, went and groveled for support for the Obama administration at the APEC conference. Samantha Power has single-handedly vetoed so many resolutions that the UN has tried to pass condemning Israel for its war crimes. It's time for us to have a different representative to the UN who doesn't overlook Israel's crimes.
And what's been the response from conference attendees to the protests outside?
You know, every year it's a mixed reaction. Generally, the people who go to AIPAC are not friendly at all. They're nasty, they're rude, they sit, they push, which, you know, on the one hand doesn't really surprise me because they're people who are pushing for belligerent foreign policy that are not in any way based in compassion. But then, you know, every so often we engage in conversation with some folks attending AIPAC who don't know that much about the lobby and who are willing to listen to our perspective. AIPAC pays for the student government to come to the AIPAC conference, and they particularly target students of color and students from Christian universities. And so a lot of those young people come to Washington, D.C., thinking that they're just getting a free ride to go lobby and get to know our nation's capital, and they don't understand the implications of AIPAC's agenda. And so we have had some great conversations and hopefully pulled some people over to the side of human rights.
And do you see a connection here between the moves by Netanyahu and AIPAC to try to pressure Obama on the issue of Iran?
Well, yeah, that's why Netanyahu's in town. Diplomacy has been working. John Kerry says it's working, and Obama says it's working. And, you know, there's been a bill up in Congress to tighten sanctions on Iran. And, you know, Obama and Kerry have come out and said that this will, in fact, harm the peace talks, if not entirely derail them.